The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free Arfcom do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begins.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course other things may take, but as for me, Give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free Arfcom starts now.
Good evening, fellow Arfcom members, zombies, pirates, gun show commandos, and anyone else out there listening. My name is Benjamin, and it's time now for your Radio Free Arfcom, the internet's voice for AR15.com, broadcasting live here from South Florida. This is your show, so feel free to call us at 415-762-1161, and please visit the Radio Free Arfcom forum on AR15.com. As always, I'd love for you to share your thoughts and comments with us here at Radio Free Arfcom. And please remember, if you or your company is interested in supporting or sponsoring Radio Free Arfcom, please visit the Radio Free Arfcom forum on AR15.com and send me an instant message to reach out to thousands of potential customers. And please visit AR15.com's site sponsor links and support Radio Free Arfcom and AR15.com by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. Also, don't forget about AR15.com's Special Operations Support Raffle. Tickets are only $10 and directly benefit our frontline special operators. Click the tab found at the top of your Arfcom site announcement page. I've got lots of bits and pieces to cover tonight that I think you'll be interested in, so let's get started. As always, I encourage the listening audience to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests as soon as possible so I can book them ahead of time. And for those of you who haven't noticed, you can now contact me via email at benjamin@ar15.com or simply send an instant message to me, Benjamin. Moving on. On tonight's show, we're always going to start with recapping last week's show and listener comments. We'll have lots of news briefs tonight. We've got some new products we've got to cover. We'll have the armed citizen from the NRA. We will have Joe DeBregalis. And from the Second Amendment Foundation, we will have Alan Gottlieb as our guests. We thank them in advance for appearing, and we're looking forward to hearing from those individuals regarding our firearms freedoms, as well as some of the current things that are going on both in the legal community as well as in the news. On last week's show, we had Joe DeBregalis from the NRA, and he and I continued our discussion of the Trigger the Vote initiative as well as the Special Operations Support Raffle. In case you didn't hear it, the Trigger the Vote is a grassroots voter registration drive by the NRA to get people registered and out to vote in this and upcoming elections. So make sure you, your friends, and family are all registered and actually get out and vote in these important upcoming elections. Obviously, the supporters of the NRA as well as freedom-loving people everywhere, need everyone's support to get out, so make sure your friends and family get out there in these upcoming elections. Also, one of the cool things we talked about, and you can check it out on the Radio Free ARFCOM forum, is NRAILASigns.org for some really cool yard signs for your home or business to show that you support and you have pride in your support and love of freedom, as well as your right to vote and your firearms freedom as well. So check that out. There's also a link for it on the August 9th show topics thread we got going in the Radio Free ARFCOM forum, so please be sure to check that out. We also had an in-depth interview with Will Ferrugia of the Executive Solution, that's theexecutivesolution.com, regarding firearms training for law enforcement and civilians. One key point that we discussed is that everyone has something to learn, and if you can afford the time and expense, a good training course can help anyone's defensive capabilities significantly. Also, look forward to some additional segments here on Radio Free ARFCOM with Will and the Executive Solution. He and I are working on an in-the-field segment where I'm going to go through one of his full-day tactical pistol rifle classes and then give you, the listeners, a taste of just what a tactical course feels like. So look forward to that in September. Hopefully by then my back will be healed enough for some real physical activity. As always, moving on, we will go to the listener comments from last week. Again, this is the you can click on the tab for August 9th Radio Free ARFCOM show schedule, and that will give you the links for last week's show. Scrolling down, we have all the links put up. And from Iggy Ort, he says, Ben, did you have any luck contacting Alan of the Second Amendment Foundation? As a matter of fact, yes, he will is scheduled to be a guest tonight, so we're looking forward to that. And I'm glad that you guys can help me book these guys and give me IDs for that. One comment was from Bob Mysterious, a Florida member here on AR15.com. He said, Will's a great guy and really knows what he's talking about. What a great surprise to get to hear from him tonight. Delray Speed Shooting Crew for the win. Well, I thank you that for those positive comments, and I'm glad we could get you on as a guest. If you scroll down, our friend and frequent poster, as well as AR15.com team member, DPMMN, made the link hot for the NRAILASigns.org. You've got a really cool Don't Tread on My Gun Rights, Vote Freedom First, a couple of cool signs from the NRA. And so it looks great on there. I had a couple of members here. Not only are they busily cleaning their M1As, but they're also grilling steaks and corn on the cob and all this fun stuff and listening back, kicking it with a cold one here on Radio Free ARFCOM. So we really appreciate you guys tuning in and listening. Relax, enjoy the show. That's definitely what we're here for. So thanks again for Will and Joe, as always, for appearing on Radio Free ARFCOM last week. Moving on, in the news, we're going to go to this segment, as we always do. Maryland, crime victim sues over denial to renew concealed carry permit. Read about it in the Washington Post. As the link comes up, after being the victim of a violent crime, the gentleman became one of the select few Maryland residents to have a license to carry a concealed handgun, but to his surprise, the Maryland State Police denied his request last year to renew the permit and saying they thought the danger to his life had passed. The agency said it was because he hadn't been attacked again, so that's kind of an odd way of looking at it from the perspective of the people who are dealing with it, why they would wait for someone to be the victim of a crime before renewing their permit does not make a whole lot of sense. But they talk about his struggle here with a rather large intruder at gunpoint and issuing his permit, and now they're not giving him his permit back. So the Second Amendment Foundation, which also was a plaintiff, obviously, in the McDonald and Chicago case, has joined this gentleman's lawsuit against the state police and the Maryland Handgun Permit Review Board. So you know, a very relevant topic in particular to the guests that we have appearing on the show tonight. So we like to keep it relevant here on Radio Free ARFCOM. So thank you for that. Continuing on with the news, a nice article here from the Las Vegas Sun, why your friend might be packing a concealed gun. They talk about Eric Scott rarely left his home without his gun tucked in his waistband, concerned about his safety while on call at night to service the pacemakers he sold. He decided to join the concealed carry permit and get his. But it says Scott was shot to death last month, but not by a criminal intending to harm him. A confrontation with police left him dead at the entrance at a Costco. I'm sure many of you remember reading about that. That was a big deal in not only the news, but also the AR15.com community. And this article goes on to talk about people, how and why they carry. So if you'd like to look at that, the links are available on the NRA ILA website and giving basically reasons why people are carrying. Louisiana, it says the gun restrictions loosened. Harassing a teenager, smoking synthetic marijuana, selling urine to help circumvent drug tests can land a person in jail. Of the more than 650 new laws to take effect within the start of the week, they have some different stuff in here, but they're talking about mainly gun restrictions will loosen, allowing concealed weapons in some churches and near most schoolyards, and permitting firearms at state parks and historic sites. So, obviously, we have a positive thing for many of the residents of Louisiana in this article. It kind of is all over the place with the different laws that are passed. I don't necessarily like how it's written, but the point being, good for Louisiana. Make sure you get out there and exercise your rights. That's why we're out voting. That's why we're talking about everybody getting permits and the Trigger the Vote initiative to make sure that people are able to exercise those rights. And so the more people we have, the more you vote, the more you get out there, make sure that you exercise those rights. Going on, and this is from the Minnesota Star Tribune. The Department of Natural Resources is searching for a site to build a massive shooting complex that could help stem the decline in hunting in the state. It says in the article by Lori Blake of the Star Tribune, does the metro area have 530 acres for a $22 million mega-sized shooting complex? The State Department of Natural Resources is about to find out. The DNR has invited metro cities, counties, townships, and park boards to offer possible sites for what would be the state's largest complex offering indoor and outdoor shooting. The purpose is to encourage more people to hunt and engage in shooting sports, said Dave Shad, the DNR's Fish and Wildlife Director. The complex would also be likely to host national competitions. They go on to state they would have 10 skeet fields, 30 trap fields, a 15-station rifle range, archery with 22 stations, pistol lanes, as well as indoor ranges as well, including a 90-acre campground that could accommodate over 200 motorhomes. So that sounds really, really cool. If any of the listeners out there or you know anybody or are friends with ARFCOM on anybody that know anything about Minnesota or in that area that could potentially take advantage of that, please chime in on tonight's show or on future shows to discuss that new shooting complex, but it sounds very, very cool. Again, that is a 530-acre shooting facility. Incredible. So we're looking forward to that in particular for our members, not only in the Radio Free ARFCOM and the AR15.com community, but in the shooting community overall. All that can do is help our sport and our firearms rights. Continuing on, we will go to the Armed Citizen. 11-year-old Elisa Gutierrez was at home alone in Albuquerque, New Mexico, when three robbers, one armed with a rifle, broke in through a back door. Gutierrez tried to hide, but when the robbers spotted her, she ran to her mother's room and retrieved a rifle. She later told the local media, "I was planning if they came right next to me, I would shoot them." The robbers fled, and after a quick check of the house, armed with the rifle, Gutierrez called 911. The police caught up with the criminals after they jumped a nearby fence. Gutierrez had only been trained to use the rifle just a few days earlier. Again, this is an 11-year-old girl defends herself from three armed robbers in her own home, and she had just learned to look about how to operate the rifle. So that is certainly a great thing that that little girl didn't come to any harm by these evil criminals trying to break into her home. And that is a prime example of the outreach programs, things like the NRA, the Eddie the Eagle program, all these different things that we can do, that, you know, certified instructors, just the gun community in general, reaching out, making sure people are properly trained, people know how to defend themselves. Here we have a fantastic case. I mean, it's too bad that her house was broken into. Obviously, we wouldn't wish that on anyone, but certainly it's great that she was able to defend herself, and I would challenge anyone out there to give that little girl a more effective tool to defend herself without even firing a shot than the firearm with which she chose to defend herself. So good for her. We need more stories like that out there. We're going to move on to the new products. I had a bunch of different stuff come to me. I got a couple of new magazines. There's a couple things here on Radio Free ARFCOM. I had a couple catalogs come in the mail of just some good deals I figured I'd pass along to everybody. So let's start with a new product from LaRue Tactical, one of AR15.com's biggest sponsors. Obviously, they make an excellent product. If you guys, I'm sure everybody out there is familiar with them. If you aren't, please, you know, check out their website and order a product or two from them. They make absolutely awesome stuff. I've personally used their optic mounts and their flashlight mounts and all kinds of stuff on pretty much every AR that I own. It's a great company. They take care of their people very well. But let's go to the thread here real quick. I just got an instant message. I'll get right to that. But it says here, and you can actually, when you go on any of the AR15.com pages, it has site notices, VFZ mounts now shipping, that with a little Texas symbol next to it. That would be the thing to click on. And posted by M. Fingar from LaRue Tactical, who is a site sponsor, obviously. The VFZ is a new theory in the concept of clamping accessories to mil standard 1913 rails. Instead of using a horizontal cross bolt, the VFZ uses a vertical bolt that draws up a clamping foot against the lower angle of the rail, seating the mount similarly to a fully closed LaRue lever. Once installed on the firearm, index marks allow the user to remove the mount, then reattach to the same tension, providing unprecedented return to zero for a non-QD levered mount. The unique vertical alignment of the clamp allows components that are structurally stronger than traditional cross-bolt designs. Eventually, VFZ will be an option to all the LaRue mounts that feature a locking lever and is a cost-effective solution for those who don't need ultra-quick disconnect capability. The VFZ takes less than a minute to install using a supplied wrench. Visit LaRue.com. If you guys scroll down, there's some really cool pictures by a couple of different members here posting of their mounts, and it certainly looks like a pretty cool product and a pretty cool attachment system. And again, that would be for someone who potentially wanted to give a more permanent mount as opposed to the famous LaRue quick disconnect mounts. I've got a couple of I got a quick instant message here, guys. Bear with me. I've got a couple instant messages here just starting the show. First going to De Bergele. Okay, I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. Joe, we also have a message here. You're coming in clear in Iraq from Free Flow. Well, thank you, sir, for your service, and thanks for listening. We certainly appreciate your service, and make sure you and all your buddies over there in the sandbox tune in. We're all pulling for you. We want you to be safe. We want you to come home, and we want you to be guests on Radio Free ARFCOM and tell us about all the interesting stuff that's going on over there, and we sincerely thank you for your efforts. So, again, thanks very much to Free Flow over in Iraq. That's pretty cool. That's the first message I've got from one of our potentially deployed members, so really cool, guys. We're going to keep pulling for you. And our hearts and prayers are with you. Continuing on to new products, there's a couple of new magazines I picked up at the grocery store. If you go to page 12 of the new Handguns magazine, this is the sister publication to Guns and Ammo. One of the things that they talk about here is the Remington R1. I don't know how many of you guys have seen the new 1911s out from Remington yet, but I spoke with a Remington rep, about a month and a half, 2 months ago, showing the catalog on them. I haven't put one in my hands yet, but they certainly appear to be a real nice $699 MSRP rifle, handgun, obviously 1911 styling with a few, it's a classic look, but it does have a few modernized features. It says, if you want to add a collection from the Remington 1911, now's your chance. The new R1 boasts a flared and lowered ejection port, beveled magwell, three-dot dovetailed sights, double diamond walnut grips, and a satin black oxide finish. Comes with 2 7-round mags and a decent price tag. That is, again, MSRP of $699. Go to 1911r1.com for more info. You should be seeing those in your gun stores coming out relatively soon. I know I had the chance to get one, and I couldn't at the time due to the budget for the shop, but they are available. They're not ubiquitous yet. I mean, they haven't really flooded the market with them, but they should start to come around here shortly. Another cool product, it's called the Max Trail D-Vice, and basically what it is it's a vice that installs into your trailer hitch on your truck, so you can have a lightweight hitch-mounted vise that weighs 17 pounds and stows easily behind a seat or a toolbox. It's a new, they call it the D-Vice from MaxCustomTieDowns.com. It's pretty cool. Again, it's basically a trailer hitch that has a vise on the end of it, so if you need to do any in the field, whether you're hunting or whether you're at a competition, if you need to do any field work that requires a vise, that's certainly a cool item. Continuing on, I've got the new Combat Handguns magazine. This is I'm sure most of you are familiar with this. And on page 91, they have their new products. They have the Wilson Combat Ammo for you fans of Wilson Combat Pistols. It says, at a time when ammunition costs require maximum effectiveness, Wilson Combat is now offering a wide range of custom ammo, enabling shooters to optimize their weapons' performance with every round sent downrange. Calibers include .380, 9mm, .38 Super, .38 Special, .357, .40 Caliber, 10mm, .45 ACP, and .460 Roland with 20 rounds per box. Visit WilsonCombat.com. Also, the Adco Magloader, and this is a product that I actually have had a lot of calls for in the gun store that I manage. I actually got these products into the store just a couple weeks ago, but now they have, and it's basically the Adco Speed Loader or the Magazine Loader, and now after years of popular demand, they have a magazine loader for .380 caliber pistols. And it covers staggered 380 magazines as well as a model for single-stack 380 magazines as well. So for the trend now that's going on that obviously many of us are aware of. The popularity of 380 ammunition is certainly high in demand, and people are buying more of the handguns, and therefore there's a call for speed loaders. So look out for them if you are interested. Last week I told you about a couple of deals that I found from LA Police Gear. Also, I just got the new Cabela's catalog that has some good deals for ARFCOMers, whether you're a hunter or a shooter or whatever else. They have their fall sale going on right now. One of the items that I'm sure many of you will get a kick of is their Star Exploding Rifle Targets, and it's basically Tannerite, and they have a couple of good deals here going. They have, starting at $19.99 when you purchase three or more, you can get a half pound per three at $19.99, a pound per three at $24.99, or 2.5 pounds per three at $49.99. So if you guys like the exploding style targets, that actually it's basically Tannerite, they're two inert components that when you mix them together, when they're impacted by a high velocity rifle round, they will make a nice little boom for you. Cool thing. So if you're interested in having some more fun out at the range, if they allow it, check out those products. Also, they have the ND3 long distance laser designator. This is from a company called Laser Genetics. And I don't know how many of you have actually put your hands on one of these, but I got to demo one of them from the rep for this company, and it's a very, very cool product. Let me just read you the little blurb from it. It's a precision optical lighting instrument using advanced green laser technology. It's a 30 millimeter beam of laser light to fully illuminate targets up to 250 yards away. You can use the one-hand adjustment of the optical collimator to give you an ultra-focused visible beam for up to 3 miles or light up larger areas with a wider setting. The green laser reflects off animal eyes for quick detection, includes a mounting system for 1-inch tubes, and allows for adjustments for windage and elevations if you want to align it with a scope. Comes with additional mounts for binoculars, spotting scopes, and Weaver rails. The ND3 is powered by a CR123V lithium battery, the same as you'd find in your Surefire flashlights or your other tactical lights. So they're very cool, whether you're a hunter, if you just want a fun toy for the nighttime, if you want a really awesome tactical laser designator for your AR-15 rifle, it's a very, very cool product. Certainly, if you have a few extra bucks laying around and you want a neat accessory, that is a neat product. Also, Cabela's has on sale VX3 rifle scopes from Leupold. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the quality of the optics and the glass that are in Leupold, and just to let you know that they have some really good sale prices on a bunch of different Leupold optics, and then again, that's on Cabela's, that's in their sale, and that's the VX3, whether you want the matte finish, the silver, the different reticles, and the different magnifications, they are all on sale, and some of them also have some different codes on them for the sale prices. So check those out. There's some good deals out there. If you guys are in the market, I know many of the hunters out there are going to be starting to gear up for season. So obviously let's, take advantage of the deals when we can. Everybody's hurting for money, but if you can find a good deal, I'm willing to share the deals I come across and try to help everybody out. And if you guys have deals for me or you find some cool stuff out there, certainly pass it along to the rest of us. I also mentioned last week some good deals from, obviously, LA Police Gear. In particular, their sale on 511 boots. I got my 511 Expert boots last Thursday and have been wearing them just about every day. The boots are excellent so far, especially for $80. And they're extremely comfortable and well-made, as well as being relatively lightweight with a sneaker-like feel. I got them because I wanted a little bit of extra support for my back, but they are still on sale at LA Police Gear if anyone needs some new boots. Just please remember, none of these are paid advertisements or endorsements. I'm just trying to pay it forward to my listeners if I run across good deals. Continuing on the cover of both these magazines that I was just telling you about, the Guns and Ammo Handguns magazine, as well as the Combat Handguns magazine, the new FNX 9mm pistol from FN Herstal is on the cover of both of them. There's a couple of nice write-ups, one by in the Handguns magazine by one of my favorite writers, Pat Sweeney. It says, the FNX might just have perfected the traditional DASA semi-auto, that's double action, single action. I'll just read you a few bits from the article. The FNX is meant to be a carry or duty pistol. They're a clean 5-pound trigger pull of single action, is plenty light enough and easy to work with. They have an ambidextrous lever at the rear of the frame, which works both as a safety and a decocker. You flip up the safety to lock the mechanism, and you can also leave the hammer cocked. One of the cool things about the FN pistols is that you can carry them in a variety of ways. Going on, Pat Sweeney continues, press the lever down past the center, and it safely decocks the hammer, and you're ready to fire as a traditional double-action pistol. He goes on, once decocked, you can push the lever up to the lock position. You now have a double-action trigger with the safety locked, preventing the trigger from moving or the hammer from cocking. Pat Sweeney goes on to write about the bore height, specifically the height of the bore over the shooter's hand. A lower bore line provides less leverage to the pistol when it recoils and thus lessens muzzle flip. The FNX allows your hand to ride higher in the frame and thus gives the gun less leverage, on recoil. They also altered the interior to bring the barrel lower in the slide frame assembly than in the FNP. Again, the FNX has less flip and bounce than its predecessor. The barrels are cold hammer forged stainless with integral feed ramp, match chamber, and bore. The slides are stainless, and they have forward cocking serrations as well as three-dot sights. The frame has an accessory rail on the dust cover where you can put a light laser combo on it. Also, interchangeable back straps with lanyard loop, as well as four back straps that are interchangeable. Holsters and mag pouches for the FNP will work for the FNX. The barrel is rated for plus P ammo. In Pat Sweeney's opinion, he says the FNX 9 is the softest shooting 9mm. With the plus P loads that he's had the chance to use in a long time. He gives it a pretty positive review. The FNX also has a FNX 40, which is the same pistol chambered in a 40 caliber. The slightly different take on it in the Combat Handguns magazine regarding the FNH FNX says they offer two versions of the FNX. Polymer-framed, high-capacity semi-auto that operates on a camlock system like the Glock and Browning High Power. One version has a stainless slide, the other a black. Both come in a hard-sided case with two mags and four back straps, instructions, and a gun lock. The main feature that both these writers are commenting on is the ambidextrous aspects of the gun, both the magazine as well as the safety and the decocker, which is probably the main concern. It's a two-position, three-function lever that you can, again, you can carry it either double action with the safety off, you can carry it cocked and locked, or you can carry it decocked with the safety on. The shooting impressions from this author from the Combat Handguns magazine, that's Richard Mann, he says, it should be understood that the FNX is a double-action, single-action pistol with multiple strike capability. If you have a misfire, you can repeatedly pull the trigger in an attempt to fire the round. He goes on to say that he wasn't familiar enough or hadn't shot the handgun enough because he wasn't super familiar with the operating system. It gave him a little bit of trouble. He says he's used to riding the thumb on the safety when he shoots a 1911. If he wasn't careful, he would actually decock the firearm when he was not trying to. But he said, obviously, this is all a training issue since he's so used to the 1911. But he goes on to conclude that most shooters should warm up to the multifunctional controls on the FNX9. And for anyone who's looking for a handgun that has a real safety that'll fit a wide array of hands, the FNX9 has to be near the top of the list. So that's two different magazines, both featuring the FNH FNX9 on the cover. So be sure to try one next time you head to the range. Or if anyone in the audience has an FNX9, please call in or post in the RFA forum and let us know what you think. Speaking of gun ranges, that leads to our next topic, which I am happy to report I finally felt good enough this past weekend to get out to the range for some shooting. A buddy and I went to our favorite range, Okeechobee Shooting Sports, where I sometimes work as a range safety officer and NRA shotgun instructor. While it was blazing hot out there, it was nice to finally be in good enough condition to at least start getting back to some low level of physical activity. On our normal range sessions, we usually do rapid fire and tactical drills in the morning, and then go over to the shotgun fields in the afternoon for some fun skeet or five-stand shooting. But I knew my back wasn't equipped for all that activity, plus the weight of swinging around my Browning Satori. However, I just sold my shooting buddy a Trigicon Tri-Power for his Stag AR, and my M1A Scout still needed sighting in, as well as my new pistol build featuring the Trigicon Reflex Optic. There's some pictures of that on the thread for tonight. But I figured since we'd be shooting from a sitting position at a table, I'd take along my Marlin 917 VSF, 17 HMR target rifle, equipped with a BSA Sweet 17 scope and bipod. First, we sighted in everything on paper at 50 yards and then took everything out to 100. I left his Stag and my custom AR pistol sighted in at 100, and I also took some practice shots to make sure the 17 was still dead on, which it was. Then I took my target out to 200 yards to finish sighting the M1A and to do some plinking with the 17. For those of you who have never shot a 17 HMR rifle, if you get the chance to shoot one, I wouldn't pass up the opportunity. Mine is scary accurate at 100 yards, or 10 shot groups the size of a dime if you do your part as the shooter. They are extremely accurate little rifles. The M1A was also quite accurate, even using the iron sights out at 200 yards without a proper bench rest. I was consistently able to ring a torso-sized steel plate once the rifle was properly sighted in, and that was using a variety of ammo. As for the pistol build, it was the first time I really test-fired it as well and sighting it in. It ran great, thanks in part to what I believe the oversized gas port drilled in my custom-made barrel, as well as the Spikes STT2 buffer, which is a heavy buffer. The Trigicon Reflex on it is an excellent optic, particularly since it doesn't rely on any type of battery power. Just put the amber triangle on the spot you want to hit, and it goes there every time. I was even able to ring the 200-yard plate consistently, even when shooting El Cheapo Silver Bear hollow point ammo out of the 10.5-inch barrel. I do recommend using the adjustable UV filter that comes with the Reflex, as it helps provide contrast for the amber reticle to show up in the bright sunlight. All in all, it was a great, if relaxed, day at the range with a good shooting buddy. We managed to get everything sighted in, and every firearm was functioning flawlessly with a variety of ammunition. Please click on the Radio Free ARFCOM thread for this week, and you'll see some of those. I just posted a picture of the firearms, but at any rate, please remember to keep it safe at the range and make sure you introduce and educate new shooters to the sport. Also, if you're not a member, please join the AR15.com team by purchasing a membership in the online store, which gives you access to all the best AR15.com has to offer. And please join the NRA, and make sure your new shooting friends join the NRA as well, because the NRA and its membership are dedicated to one thing, protecting our God-given, constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms. Speaking of the NRA, we have with us now our regular NRA guest, Mr. Joe DeBergale from the NRA. I hope I finally figured out how to pronounce your name. But he is on the line to discuss our firearms freedoms and what's going on in the current news and the NRA. Welcome back, Joe. Always good to have you, sir.
Hi, Ben. How are you, my friend? And the mystery about my last name is, it's correctly, I was having problems with it myself here. It's DeBergalis. But DeBergalis is fine. Half the family says it one way, the other half says it the other way. So it's no great shakes. Glad to hear that you went out to the range. It means you're on
the mend
and you're doing well.
What's that?
I said, I'm glad to hear that you're on the mend and that you're recovering well while you're out there at the range. That's fantastic.
Thank you, and I appreciate all the goodwill that everybody on the forum has given me, and all the listeners out there have been real positive. And it's a slow process, but you know, it's one of those things where you can't do too much. And I didn't push myself and do anything too bad, but it's just a matter of taking your time and really, you know, taking care of the body in such a way that you don't push it beyond its natural capabilities, I guess. But at any rate, like I said, we covered a few things from the NRA news. We also talked about the Trigger the Vote last week, as well as some of the signage available. What's new right now that the NRA that we haven't maybe not have heard about yet, or some of the listeners might like to know about that you can give us some insight on, Joe?
Well, we're always working on new and novel things to outreach to our membership. The big competitions right now that are going on, and everybody knows most regionals and championships are being conducted. Cam Perry, I think we touched upon it last week briefly. The NRA continues out there representing all the great folks competing in Cam Perry. It's been closely contested out there. They did a great job. I think we're winding down now, but this is a great facility. A lot of great off-commers are out there as well. I've been hearing from a lot of them. Appreciate us covering that. So we got it in the competition world. We're also, as we always are, gearing up for the Ocelot this coming September. Special elections that are going on in the next couple of weeks. We have most primaries in September. We have the general election season. The pistol shot goes off and we're in gear for November. That's on the Isla side of the house. And then just overall, one of the things we haven't touched on much, but it's really near and dear to my heart, is the Eddie Eagle Gun Safety Program. We're up to, and we have touched 23 million children in this country with that program. 23 million. And it's a fantastic program. It's actually a gun avoidance program. And the mantra, stop, don't touch, leave the area, tell an adult, is found and true method of making sure that our children are protected. We got something they may not understand yet. But I sincerely hope that everybody takes the time, like my parents did with me, at a very, very, very early age, to make sure I understand the operating and working parts of a firearm and what's the difference between a play gun and a real one. A little extra time there always adds to the safety of our children, and the safety quotient goes up tenfold. Just a little few minutes here and there. So, pretty much, it's, you know, we're the dog days of summer, Ben, and we're just trying to make sure that we all geared up for a variety of fronts and take on the fall.
Let's talk a little bit, since we are obviously in the summertime and we're nearing the end of the summertime, and obviously there's been a lot of, you know, kids being off school and maybe hanging around the house a little bit more than they normally would, or going to their friends' houses, and how that sort of relates to the NRA's Eddie Eagle program. And then also on that, the role that those maybe who are not familiar with the Eddie Eagle program, where they can provide materials that are totally nonpartisan or non-politically motivated regarding the NRA gun safety, and how we might be able to tell our our children or our friends, the parent, you know, parents of children that we know, or even teachers and members of the school board to get in to participate in the NRA Eddie Eagle program without it being, you know, a confrontational thing, or without bringing up the controversial issue of firearms, which, as we many of us know, the education community tends to be rabidly against.
Oh, most certainly. The toughest thing we have, and I've gone to many school board meetings and a variety of parent-teacher conferences and PTOs and a whole bunch of different parent-teacher organizations out there to try to get the message across. And one of the most difficult things we have is most school boards, I know this probably is not shocking most people, are very, very liberal. So the very first thing they hear is NRA. And they'll do anything beyond even a sound program, like the Eddie Eagle Gun Safety Program. They don't want it anywhere near, because they're going to turn it from a safety program into their belief it's a recruiting program. And it couldn't be further from the truth. And once we sit down and talk to them, we'll probably get about half the board to swing our way. I'm talking about the Northeast. Half the board, the other ones say absolutely not. So then we go to the other, I call them service or support organizations out there, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Royal Rangers, variety of, the Brownies, every type of youth organization out there, and say, listen, we can present this program. And you don't need to have a representative from the NRA. We can send you out the information, and a Cubmaster or a Scoutmaster or a den leader or any of the people out there who have actively involved in the whole array of service type of organizations can get the information, read up on it, and then get the program. It's very, very user-friendly. It teaches itself. It reinforces stop, don't touch, leave the area, tell an adult. And it's virtually cost-free. The NRA Foundation raises money specifically for this and a lot of other endowed programs within the NRA. Eddie Eagle, if anybody out there wants materials on Eddie Eagle, what's it all about, please feel free to IM me. I'll be more than happy to send it out to you. You can go to the NRAfoundation.com, I believe it is, or just the NRA.org website. Punch in Eddie Eagle in the search engine, and I'll pop up for you. And get to that program. We have some very, very good, dedicated employees in the Eddie Eagle program. I happen to be on the Law Enforcement Assistance Committee, which monitors Eddie Eagle. We have a great and dedicated staff that is very, very proactive in getting the word out. And the one thing I must add, this program was a creation and founded by former NRA President Marion Hammer down there in Florida, right where you are, Ben. And I'm sure you know Marion well, because she's in the forefront of a lot of states' rights issues down there in Florida. But she's cast a wide shadow on the Eddie Eagle program, as well as a lot of pro-gun, pro-freedom initiatives out there.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, and I'd really appreciate it if maybe during or after the show you could post the link for everybody for the Eddie Eagle program, because one of the things that I often get asked, you know, we do the concealed weapons courses at our gun shop and at the gun range. And we have an awful lot of these people who are parents, and they say, hey, how can I get a gun safety course for my child? You know, where do I go to do that? Do you guys offer that here? What's involved with it? So if you could, you know, not only for my benefit, but for, I'm sure, all of our listeners out there, for their benefit as well, to be able to find that stuff very easily, because, you know, it's one of those subjects that, you know, I'm thinking that, at least from my perspective, we could have these classes, you know, and almost do it as a community service, just to get, you know, have some kids come into the store where we teach the class, and we could say, hey, look, you know, this is the, we teach them the Eddie Eagle program, we could teach them, you know, the basic, you know, the tenets of the Eddie Eagle, stop, don't touch, get, you know, leave the room and tell an adult, and have it kind of as a fun thing. I mean, heck, you could have Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts and Girl Scouts and all kinds of stuff in there, and then also not only that, but the children of our customers as well.
Well, this is the thing now. Eddie Eagle, the mascot that's involved, and not be present where there's any firearms. That being a traditional firearm setting, meaning a store, you can be at a range with no firearm activity going on. That's it for a reason, because it's a gun avoidance basically program. I can teach a gun safety program to anybody who wants to be out there. This program specifically targeted to from preschool to third grade to make sure, and the main course of this is, and this is why some of the liberal-minded people don't understand, is this isn't how to safely handle a firearm when they come across one. That's the responsibility of you and me as NRA instructors, concerned parents, family members, what have you. This is a gun avoidance. If you come across one, you stop, don't touch, you leave the area, tell an adult. If I want to sit there and tell my child or my niece and nephew, in my case, or whatever, how to safely handle a firearm, totally separate program. Because we want to get it out there that this here is to make sure that you get somebody who's a little bit older, wiser, and should know better, come in and handle that firearm as opposed to the child trying to do it him or herself.
Well, I'm glad you made that clear, because that's one of the things that obviously is, I mean, is a big misconception. I mean, and I guess I kind of misspoke, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, it's a lot of people don't even realize what the difference between the potentially being a gun handling versus a gun avoidance program, which I think would be an ideal thing. And if somebody were to get involved, say for example, if a parent if one of my customers came in and said, hey, you know, I have a child I want to, or I have a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout or a community service organization, and by the way, we want to get into this program, can anybody teach it? And I'm sure our listeners get, you know, that are firearms enthusiasts, you know, hey, can I teach it? I'm an average parent. Can I teach this class? And how do I go about doing that? Are there requirements involved, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, basically, it's a self-taught program. And I can send you the program. You can set it up and teach everybody in your neighborhood if you like. You don't need to be a certified instructor. It's very simplistic. It sends a very dynamic message. It's something where if a concerned parent or, like I mentioned, scoutmaster or baseball coach or what have you wants to sit there and bring it forward to his kids, he can sit there or she can sit there, read over the literature, and there's help aids. It's very user-friendly. So everything you need to teach a course is provided for you. There's coloring books, there's activities, there's online programming, there's CD-ROMs, there's all that kind of good stuff, DVDs. There's all these things that are out there. For those of you who still have the VHS, you know, I don't even have it anymore. The video home recorder thing there. You have all that kind of stuff. You can play it there. It's very simple. So you can basically hold this in your basement if you want to. So it's something where if people want to IM me, I'd be more than happy to give them the information. I have virtually a large selection of this information. I'd be more than happy to send it out to them. What I would invite them to do is they can get the Eddie Eagle mascot outfit. There's a contest at the Law Enforcement Activities Division, the lead division of NRA, holds every year where we give away two of these mascot uniforms. And we try to find a law enforcement agency in the various jurisdictions throughout the country who take the program in, and we provide the mascot uniform, if you will, out to them. There's a variety of Friends of NRA dinners. If people would volunteer their time to help them out, they can apply for a grant and have the mascot uniform purchased on behalf of whatever groups, and they can loan it out. We've been very successful in doing that. But you don't need it. You can sit there, show it on a video screen. You can show it on the TV. You can show it on the computer. You can show it projected on the wall if you like. But it's very simplistic to get the message across. Like I said, it's very simplistic with a dynamic message.
And you said that is there a certain age, or where do you, in your experience, go from a program like the Eddie Eagle program, and then I guess the nearest term would be graduate a youngster to an actual potentially, you know, gun safety class or handling class or whatever. What's in your, you know, professional opinion, the level and the age to do that responsibly?
Well, I think that's determined by each individual parent. I know it, obviously there was no Eddie Eagle, but there was, my father made sure when I was old enough, part of the ritual, my father was a law enforcement officer, of him going to work is I present him with his shield or his badge, and at the time he's carrying a 357. So that was part of it when I was 5, 6 years old. And that's how I was taught in respect of firearms. So it's when the parents believe that the child is capable, mature enough, in order to manipulate the firearm and render it safe. Now, I believe, I don't want to give a certain age, Ben, because it's, I don't know each individual family dynamic. There may be some children who are older who can't handle it. There may be some who are younger that can't. But that dynamic in the safe firearm handling to render it safe if they come across it, that's a question that needs to be answered around the family kitchen table. The Eddie Eagle program itself starts in pre-kindergarten or pre-K, and it goes to the third grade. We have it in both English and in Spanish, so it reaches out to a wide variety of people and different cultures. It's all there. So, but it's the individual's family as to determine when they graduate into the next level.
Let me ask you something that is of a concern to me, but is also, I'm sure, a question that, again, many of the listeners who are parents or have friends that are parents are asking. You know, my fiance is a teacher, and she teaches in a very, I guess you could say, low-income area elementary school where you would, and not to put out stereotypes, but there may be, let's say, a lack of proper and safe firearms, you know, handling, and there may be less than responsible firearm storage and things of that nature going on in these little kids' homes. How would someone like me, being an NRA instructor and member and Radio Free ARFCOM host and AR15.com member, as well as all of our listeners out there, how would somebody like me or like you or anybody actually approach the subject of that? Where would you start? Would you start the school board, the principal's office? How would you go about initiating a program like this out of not necessarily a civic duty, but just as, you know, I'm a person that I don't want to see any little kid get harmed because they didn't know how to follow the right steps. And if there's something that I can do to help out, you know, my fiance's kids in their school, you know, her students, how does somebody go about taking on that challenge?
Most like any other challenge, is textbooks that are kids are being given to the Eddie Eagle Gun Safety Program. First, what I've been successful in is seeing where there's a need. You mentioned the inner city. You mentioned a rural area that may not have the same type of programming or the same type opportunities for parents to take advantage of, and they're rearing of their kids. But it's something where, Ben, if you take the time, if you're interested to go through your fiancé's school system and say, we have this program, in Florida, it's very well received and it's widely taught down there. So you won't run into the same opposition as some of the more anti-gun states, Illinois, New York, New Jersey. We always have this constant battle to allow alternative lifestyle training in schools to be taught in the student assembly. But when we bring up the Eddie Eagle Gun Safety Program, you would have thought I wanted to introduce some kind of biological agent into the school. It's very difficult sometimes to get past the onus of that. But when you mentioned it, and you touched the nerve there, the kids who are most in need to get this program, and it's free. It's just a matter of getting it to them. And once we do, it's been well received. The thing that I've done is, if I'm allowed to, go into classrooms and do it. So sometimes it's not approved by the school system as a whole, but an individual teacher, if they have that leeway, can bring in Maybe if you have a show and tell day, you can do the Eddie Eagle. If they have a safety day, there's been times when we head in there and you have Woodsy Owl and you have Smokey Bear and you have Eddie Eagle and you have all the mascots with good positive messages out there. And they're in there doing their little 15-minute segments along the way. I've done that a few times. So it's, I wish we had more volunteers. Our volunteer and training cadre or just volunteer individuals are very determined to get the program out. It's just a matter of trying to get the message across. So it's difficult to say or to give a blueprint or a direction as to how to get it in everybody's school system. We're trying. Like I said, we taught it 23 million times to 23 million children. So we're getting it across. But I would wish every child. We had an opportunity here in New York, and unfortunately, the governor vetoed it. The Eddie Eagle gun safety bill went all the way to his desk, which was mandated if the school system allowed it, Eddie Eagle. And this was in the year 2001, actually, and it was vetoed by then-Governor Pataki. That was the year that he vetoed Eddie Eagle, and then he instituted all the draconian gun laws, the assault weapons ban and what have you. So it's something where we try. We're out there advocating, and it's just a matter of getting more people interested in looking at the program and getting the materials in their hands.
It's unfortunate and yet amazing and yet not surprising, all rolled into one, that you would have a governor veto something like that. It's just, like many things in today's society and news, just boggles the mind as to where somebody's head might be or what they're doing, just if you purely political ends. But if anybody wants some more information on the Eddie Eagle program, I certainly do. You can go to NRA.org and just put in Eddie Eagle. I'm going to go ahead and we've got another guest coming on soon, Joe, but I really appreciate all the info. And I'm going to let you run here in a minute, my friend. But as always, if you have any parting words, we certainly appreciate having you on the show as our regular guest.
Well, I greatly appreciate it, Ben. You have a great guest coming on. Alan's doing some great work for the Second Amendment Foundation. His partner, Joe Tartaro's out here, is a dear friend of mine out here in Buffalo, New York. They publish the New Gun Week. I wholeheartedly encourage people, if they haven't looked at it or subscribed, maybe they let their subscription lapse. It's a great periodical that comes out, very timely, and they cover all the subjects that all of us in ARFCOM love to read about. So give my best to Alan, great, and have a great show, Ben.
Thank you, sir, and we're looking forward to having you on next week. As always, Joe DeBregalis from the NRA. Our good friend DPMMN posted some info here for those of you that are interested on our thread for tonight's show. It's nrahq.org/safety/Eddie/. And then here's just the blurb that he posted. Begun in 1988, the Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program has reached more than 21 million children in all 50 states. The program was developed through the combined efforts of qualified professionals as clinical psychologists, reading specialists, teachers, curriculum specialists, urban housing safety officials, and law enforcement. Anyone may teach the Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program, and NRA membership is not required. The program may be readily incorporated into existing school curriculum, taught in a 1-to-5-day format, and used to reach both levels or simply one or two grades. Materials available for this program are student workbooks, animated DVD, instructor guides, brochures, and student reward stickers. They're also available in Spanish. The NRA is committed to helping keep America's young children safe, and in that effort, they offer the program at a nominal fee. Schools, law enforcement, hospitals, daycares, libraries may be eligible to receive grant funding to defray program costs. Grant funding is available in many states to these groups and is available to cover the cost of the program materials. The purpose of the program, give me one second here, folks, is to not to teach whether guns are good or bad, but rather promote the protection and safety of children. The program makes no value judgments about firearms, and no firearms are ever used in the program. Like swimming pools, electrical outlets, matchbooks, and household poisons, they're treated simply as an everyday fact of life. With firearms freedom in about half of American households, the NRA's position on that is a stance that makes sense. Eddie Eagle is never shown touching a firearm, nor does he promote firearm ownership or use. It prohibits the use of Eddie Eagle mascots anywhere that guns are present, and the Eddie Eagle has no agenda other than accident prevention, ensuring that kids stay safe should they encounter a gun. The program never mentions the NRA, nor does it encourage children to buy guns or become NRA members. The NRA does not receive any appropriations from Congress, nor is it a trade organization, and it's not affiliated with any firearm or ammunition manufacturer or with any business that deals in guns and ammo. So that is the Eddie Eagle program. We are certainly glad that the NRA and like similar organizations are available to help keep all the little kids out there safe. So I'm certainly going to make an effort. I know my fiance's school year is just about to get started this week. I'm really going to try and make an effort to get out and reach those kids. Like I said, many of them are low income. Many of them may or may not have the proper, household with potentially, safe gun storage and so on and so forth. So we certainly want to make sure all the kids out there are kept safe. The guest recommended to us from the Second Amendment Foundation posted a video. You can see him. He's been on all the major news networks. This is Alan Gottlieb, the executive director from the Second Amendment Foundation, which is yet another representative from another great organization fighting to preserve and protect our gun rights through education as well as through legal channels. Their mission statement, the Second Amendment Foundation, and this is SAF.org, the Second Amendment Foundation is dedicated to promoting a better understanding about our constitutional heritage to privately own and possess firearms. To that end, we carry on many educational and legal action programs designed to better inform the public about the gun control debate. With us, a very special guest, Alan Gottlieb, the executive director, again, SAF.org, that's the Second Amendment Foundation. Sir, it is a pleasure and an honor to have you here as a guest, Mr. Alan Gottlieb.
Well, it's great to be with you, especially today, because today is a day where we just filed another major lawsuit to help protect gun rights.
And I noticed on the web page that you go to when it's on the SAF.org, it's funny that we were talking about this tonight with Joe from the NRA. We were talking about kids and gun safety, and I saw an interview you'd conducted some time back on, I believe it was MSNBC, regarding some of the programs of trying to teach not only gun safety but also the shooting sports in school. So it kind of ties in there. But tell me a little bit more about what's going on today and the current events and how that all applies to the broader picture of your organization and your fight for everyone's, like I always say, God-given and constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms.
Well, let me back up just a little bit here. The major lawsuit, McDonald versus Chicago, that knocked out the Chicago gun ban, was our lawsuit. And since that lawsuit was filed and we won along with the U.S. Supreme Court and knocked out the Chicago gun ban and affirmed that the Second Amendment is not only an individual right, but it's also incorporated through the 14th Amendment and applicable to all 50 states, so now everybody can enjoy it all across the country. We have filed a bunch of other suits, and we've picked up the mantra, I guess, that we're defending firearms freedom one lawsuit at a time. The day the McDonald decision came down, we filed a suit in North Carolina. They have a law there, an Emergency Powers Act, that in times of emergencies like snowstorms or hurricanes, they can suspend Second Amendment rights. And we went to federal court, and we filed suit against them the day the McDonald decision came down, which basically authorized us to attack other anti-gun laws around the country. And then a few weeks ago, we filed a suit in New York State, in Westchester County, against the New York State gun carry law that basically has to show, you have to show good cause to be able to have a firearm, to get to have a permit to carry it. And one of our plaintiffs there was denied that permit because he could not show that he had any greater need to have a firearm for self-protection than anybody in the general public. And we found that as preposterous, so we filed suit. And then a few weeks ago, we filed suit in Maryland because we have a plaintiff in Maryland, a man who actually was granted a permit to carry a firearm concealed because he was attacked. And the person who attacked him was then got probation, parole. He violated the probation, went off to prison. Now he's out of prison, and he's living in the neighborhood of our person who he attacked and obviously would like to get even with. And our gentleman there was denied a renewal of his permit. And again, the Second Amendment and the Heller ruling and the McDonnell ruling, basically, we feel that law is totally unconstitutional. So we filed suit in Maryland. Then today, of course, Chicago, not wanting to abide by the spirit of the McDonnell versus Chicago ruling that knocked out their gun ban, passed a new gun ordinance that's extremely severe. And one of the things in it, while you're now allowed to own a handgun in Chicago, which is great news, the hoops they make you jump through are next to impossible. As an example, they make you go to a gun range and have live fire training, which I have no problem with the training, but their law bans gun ranges. So if you live in Chicago, don't have access to a car or money or a way to get out of the city to go someplace to find a gun range and get certified by an instructor, you come back with a certificate, you still can't own the gun. So we filed suit today in Chicago under both First Amendment grounds and Second Amendment grounds, because the Second Amendment Foundation teaches gun safety, which is, I guess, what you were talking about earlier, and you're infringing on our First Amendment right to speak and teach, you know, gun safety by not allowing us to have ranges in Chicago. And then Second Amendment rights, again, a person can't own the firearm if they don't have the certificate that they attended the gun range, and so you can't ban gun ranges and then say you have to have the certificate that you can't get. So we filed suit today in Chicago, along with the Illinois State Rifle Association, three individual plaintiffs, one of which is an elderly black woman with a lot of medical problems. She's been a crime victim three times, and she can't get travel to a range outside of Chicago to be able to get this training to get her permit. And also Action Target, who makes gun ranges, and Gun Range Supplies filed suit with us as a plaintiff as well, because we've contracted with them to build a permanent gun range in Chicago so that people can get the training. We've also signed an agreement with another company to get a mobile gun range in, and a person, we signed an agreement for property so that we can put the gun range down in Chicago and have people trained immediately, because come October, if the people who had firearms want to be grandfathered in, if they don't have this training certificate, they're going to lose the right to have their firearms in Chicago. So we turned around, we filed the suit, and we asked for a preliminary injunction against the law. We're an injured party because we've landed all this money on all these contracts to be able to have a gun range in Chicago so people could get the training so they can legally own a gun.
That's just incredible. I mean, there's so many, not only just hoops, but it's as if that the not only, I mean, Chicago was probably the most egregious of all of them, but it's as if these different states and counties and municipalities and townships, as if they have absolutely no respect not only for the Constitution, but also for the ruling of the Supreme Court.
You're right, and Chicago is probably the worst. Washington, D.C., of course, when their gun ban got struck down, they didn't want to comply with the spirit of the law either. They passed a very strict gun control law that we're challenging in court as well in Washington, D.C., but even their new law didn't go as far as Chicago's new law goes. So, I mean, Chicago obviously is trying to do everything they can to retard anybody from being able to own a firearm any way they can. And they're even planning on trying to put on the ballot. The mayor in Chicago, Cook County, is trying to put a ballot measure on the ordinance for people to support the assault weapon ban that they have in Cook County, because they know that's going to be challenged in court, and under the McDonnell ruling, it's probably going to, you know, bite the dust. So they want to show that the people want it by a ballot measure. The only problem is they have me to the call if I get enough signatures to sign their petitions to even put it on the ballot.
So obviously there's a lot of challenges. If those of you following along on the internet, I just want to give you guys a heads up to where to go to talk about and to view all these different topics that we're discussing. It's saf.org, that's secondamendmentfoundation.org. And if you just scroll down to the news and releases, you'll see all the things that Mr. Gottlieb and myself are discussing. The SAF sues Chicago over gun range prohibition. The Maryland group gives money for help in the lawsuit. The handgun permit denial in Maryland. So all these things are available. They have a real nice website. It's saf.org, and there's some cool links there. But how does all this stuff tie together, Alan, in terms of what's the ultimate goal of the SAF, and how do these individual victories bode for the bigger picture of firearms freedom in America as a nation?
Well, these victories are boding well for us, coming at a very critical time. But basically, our mission is to defend and expand gun rights, individual gun rights, not only in our own country but around the globe. And in doing that, we also involved with a national group called the International Association for the Protection of Civilian Arms Rights, IAPCAR, with member groups all across in nations all across the globe. So we're working any way we can, and we're a non-governmental organization at the United Nations, and we've been attending the various anti-gun treaty meetings that they've been having to try and stop the treaties from being ratified at the UN. Anything we can do to defend gun rights, the right to self-defense, anywhere in the world, we're basically involved in. And it's become, I guess in the last couple of years, the most important area we've been involved in probably is auto lawsuits. And the reason why they're so, so important right now is that Barack Obama is stacking the courts with anti-gun judges. Now, we'll hear about the Supreme Court nominees, Kagan or Sotomayor, and those make press. But you never hear about the next lower court down on the appeals courts or on the district court benches themselves. And he's not appointed to one judge that supports the Second Amendment. Every single judge he has appointed has been an anti-gun rights activist. And that's really alarming. In fact, some of these activists are so bad that one judge that he appointed to the appeals court in Illinois, but it's the federal courts, believes that animals should have the right to sue hunters in court. And anything they can do to try and stop any kind of gun use is what these guys are up to. So it's really important for us to get these legal precedents down now before the courts are stacked so heavily against us that the courthouse door is shut in our face.
Right, and that's one of the things that has grown increasing in terms of scope as well as breadth for the topics that we discuss here on the program on Radio Free ARFCOM, whether it be with Joe, or we had on Valinda Rowe from Illinois Concealed Carry, or gentlemen such as yourself, Alan, is that elections matter, and it matters that people get out and they vote and they actively defend their rights, because it's not just the face of the politician on the ballot box, it's the decisions that can be made down the road, whether it be a president appointing federal judges to the Supreme Court, all the way down to a local county commissioner potentially passing an ordinance, or a mayor passing providing some sort of thing that could potentially eliminate our rights, no matter where you live, whether it be Chicago, Illinois, or Washington, D.C., or New York City, or wherever the case may be.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just the elected officials and judges, but you got bureaucrats, too. Many times laws get passed by Congress or by state legislatures, and the actual enabling language is one thing, but the actual fulfillment of those ordinances are done by bureaucrats, and they get to write the rules and the regulations that you have to live by or affect your gun rights. And Congress in particular has been historically bad at this in the last, X number of years, because they basically passed something, and let me use just as an example the health care bill. They passed health care, but how that's implemented and how it's been put in place isn't up to Congress. Congress didn't say that. They left that as a blank check to government agencies and bureaucrats to enforce. And this administration would love to do that with gun laws as well, because that way Congress doesn't have to say, well, we banned guns or we regulated guns to a ridiculous point. What it is then is, the bureaucracy gets to do it. And Congress can claim, well, we didn't know they were going to do that. And that's one of the problems we face right now, is what's hidden. How do you have these laws come about, and then how they get enforced in a very hidden manner? It's far from being transparent.
And one of the questions that comes to mind when I look at the site for the Second Amendment Foundation, SAF.org, and there's all these different things. There's as you were speaking about, the good cause carry permit requirement in New York, the Maryland permit denial for the gentleman whose attacker just got out of prison, the emergency gun powers ban in North Carolina, the Chicago absolute upside-down, bizarro world craziness that they call their supposed gun rights. I mean, there's all this crazy stuff going on around the country and around the world. Does your organization pick and choose the battles that are the right ones to fight for mine and for yours and for every American and hopefully every individual in the world and their rights to not only firearms, but firearms for self-protection and self-defense?
Well, you asked a very, very good, important question. And that's been one of our things we've been working on for a long time, is developing a strategy that would pay off legally in courts and be able to win. So first of all, we tend to draw our lawsuits generally in a narrow fashion, so we don't try to win everything in one shot, or throw the kitchen sink up against the wall, so to speak, and hope that something sticks in court. We tend to do each lawsuit tends to be a narrow focus on point of something that we think we can attack and win. And we try to do it in a way that we're building a foundation and going for the lower hanging fruit first. So we pick off those things that we know we can win at, to try and build a base and a foundation for the next lawsuit to be filed, so that it makes it harder and harder for judges to rule against us because of the precedents that are being established. And, of course, we tend to have to pick the right jurisdictions to do that. As an example, in the Heller case that knocked out the D.C. gun ban, D.C. was picked because the 14th Amendment, the Second Amendment was never really ruled on by the Supreme Court to begin with, but then you had the problem if you would have filed that suit in any of the 50 states, the federal government would have argued that the 14th Amendment never incorporated the Second Amendment, and so then you would lose on those grounds to start with. So we had to start in some place where the 14th Amendment wouldn't come into the picture. Only the Second Amendment would. D.C. was that because it was a federal enclave. It didn't necessarily apply to the states, so we were able to do that. And then once we were able to pass, we were on that, knocked out the D.C. gun ban. Then we went to some place with just as bad, equally a bad ban, which was Chicago, and filed that with the McDonald case so that we could get the 14th Amendment incorporation so that the Second Amendment would now apply to laws in all 50 states. That then allowed us to file the other suits that we just talked about. So this has been a strategy in placement that way, on one hand, to be able to make this lawsuit stick. And then the second part of that is that we're taking a look at those places with the worst and most severe laws, that we also have to then compile plaintiffs that we feel are sympathetic to the courts and the general public. So as an example, Otis McDonald in Chicago was an African-American man whose father was a sharecropper. He grew up in the South, and at 16 years old, his mother put him on a bus with $18, which was all the money they had, and said, go to Chicago, you can have a better life there, and go make your mama proud. Well, he went to Chicago, was a janitor at the University of Chicago, eventually became a janitorial engineer, raised some beautiful children that all went to college, became a crime and drug fighter in his neighborhood in the bad section of Chicago, was attacked a number of times by gangs because of him trying to clean up his street from criminals. It was a very sympathetic person to be a plaintiff to show his need to own a gun and the community leader that he was and how his man has done such a good job. In fact, the story I love to tell was when I was sitting with Otis at the Supreme Court during our case, and we had our own arguments and we finished the arguments and we walked out into the lobby, Otis looked at me and he said, now I've done my mama proud. And I couldn't have a dry eye. I mean, these are the kind of people you really want to work with and help push the envelope. We have other plaintiffs, example, in California. We have a suit there going on right now in federal court. California has this, what they call a handgun roster. And if the handgun isn't on it, you don't have Second Amendment rights to own the gun. And we have a gentleman there who's born with a birth defect. There's no right arm below the elbow. He needs to shoot left-handed and wants a particular model of an ambidextrous Glock that is not on the list, not allowed to be sold in California. But, it's a special gun for a person with a handicap like he's got. and so we have a handicapped person as our key plaintiff to show that this list is unconstitutional. You know, there's no list of approved books you can read or approved religions you can practice. There shouldn't be any approved list of what guns you can own. So that gives you an example of, you know, the kind of person we have there. We also have another suit in California challenging California's carry law, where our lead plaintiff in that particular case is a lesbian, a gay rights activist who's very prominent in California. His life's been threatened a number of times. And when you're filing suits in Northern California, that's the kind of plaintiff that's sympathetic, you know, to the media and, you know, and to the courts and the judges there. So we tend to look for particular plaintiffs in particular areas that will, you know, break the norm, so to speak, and not be the, you know, old, bald white guy who wants to have his gun collection. And that's what part of our secret has been to winning these cases.
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing, not only for what you do, but for what we do. You know, I'm in the retail business. I manage a small gun store. You know, I'm also a certified firearms instructor. And I think it's very important to try to not only break the mold, but also embrace those individuals that may not fit the typical white middle class male that people think of as your quote unquote stereotypical or average gun owner, because there are people, you know, that we get in our classes that for the concealed weapons permits, they may be minorities, they may be women, they may be people that don't quite fit that traditional mold, and it's important to get them on our side, because once they get into that concealed weapons class, then you have an opportunity not only to teach them the basic things that they need to know to get their permits and to get them on the right track as far as they're already thinking about defending themselves. Now you also need to get them in the mindset of defending their rights. And that's when when people think about that, they say, well, wait a minute. If I didn't have this right, then where would I be if I have a stalker or a potentially somebody who's discriminating or harassing me because of my race or my sexual orientation or whatever the case may be, you know, physical disability and so on and so forth. You know, we had, you know, in the last class that we had two handicapped individuals and we had a middle-aged African-American woman. And that doesn't fit at all with, and we had a husband and a wife. I mean, that doesn't really fit the mold of what, you know, you think the redneck gun-toting, you know, individual. So I think it's important for all of us to not only embrace that, but then take that basic concept of I want to be able to defend myself and my family. And all you have to do is sort of just lead them down the road of, well, guess what? You also need to work at defending your rights, and here are the tools you need to do it. You have the Second Amendment Foundation. You have the NRA. You have all these different – you have Illinois Concealed Carry. You have all these different rights groups, whether they be nationwide or whether they be statewide or even countywide, to have the opportunity to let citizens – sort of wake up to their mind and understand that, okay, it's not just about me as an individual. It's about everybody else's right to defend themselves. God forbid the case should arise.
Yes, I agree with you totally. That's the more we expand the base, the more people own guns, the more people own guns, you're right, the more people will defend their right to keep and bear arms. And to use those firearms, and then as a result, we have more people voting for the right candidates in the elections. We have more people involved in all of our activities protecting our gun rights, and that's sort of the road we've been taking.
One of the questions that when I asked you just a minute ago, I said, you know, how do you pick the arguments and the plaintiffs? But I got to thinking during your response. You know, I've always, you know, in the reading of the Founding Fathers and in reading about natural rights, you know, when we think about the God-given right to self-protection and then, you know, and the natural rights that the Founding Fathers like Jefferson always wrote about, man having natural rights, and in particular, one of those rights was to defend themselves. And then you have specifically enumerated in the Constitution the right specifically to keep and bear arms with the implicit expectation that people would be using those arms not only you know, for food gathering and whatever, but there's nothing about hunting in the Second Amendment. It was implicit, if not explicit, that it was about the right to self-defense. Now, that being said, how can these people fight back in court, the people you're going up against? I mean, what are their arguments and what are their strategies? It boggles my mind. I can't even put my head around it. How do these people come up with an argument against that? It's totally ludicrous to anyone who has studied anything about not only history and the Constitution, but about the natural rights of man.
Well, I can't disagree with anything you just said there, and that's why I get very frustrated, particularly like, for example, both in the Heller rulings that took out the D.C. gun ban and the McDonald ruling that took out, in our lawsuit against Chicago, took out the Chicago gun ban, that four of the nine Supreme Court justices ruled against us. We only won those cases by one vote. Four justices ruled the other way. Now, in the McDonald case, the four justices ruled against us because they wanted to re-argue the Heller case. In the Heller case, the four justices ruled against us because they just weren't going to admit that the Second Amendment is an individual right. To them, it was giving the government the right to have, the National Guard, so to speak, which obviously it's not. But it's like they don't really care. To them, I guess the means justifies the ends, and if they don't want you to have a firearm, they're going to figure a way to get around and do it. Sort of the way that Sotomayor and Kagan and two new Supreme Court justices play with the issue. Yes, there's a right to keep your arms, but that right isn't for you. And so who's the right for? Well, it doesn't matter because the right doesn't apply to you. And that's the kind of double talk we get from these people and why, there's these problems out there. And it doesn't make any sense. It defies logic. And, of course, the sad part about this, these judges, in many cases, a great example, let me give you a good example. On the McDonald case, the four judges that ruled against us, their primary argument was that the Second Amendment may give you some kind of a right. We don't know what that right is. But more importantly, that right can't apply to the states. Because, one, the issue is controversial, and two, not everybody agrees on what the Second Amendment is. Therefore, it can't apply to the states. These are the same four judges on that court, as an example, that I'm just taking on the abortion question, that believe that the states should be banned from being able to passing anti-abortion legislation on the 14th Amendment. And in that case, let's be honest, abortion is obviously controversial, and abortion is obviously not everybody agrees on the question. Therefore, the same grounds, the same four judges ruled against the Second Amendment, they would rule the exact same way, oppositely, on another issue if it's a freedom that they care about. So the hypocrisy is just absolutely appalling.
And do you find that it's just a matter of them being complicit with the progressive agenda of on one hand, and not to try to, I'm trying to avoid wading into the contentious nature of the abortion debate, but on one hand they have their agenda of they want to protect.
I guess
right
what it
human,
is the right,
but not,
the rights that they care about. Yeah, if the right that they care about, they'll extend all kinds of protections and laws to it. If it's a right they don't like, they won't extend any protections to it. It's sort of like they think they can give away their neighbor's rights and still keep their own rights on something they care about. And it just doesn't work that way. And it's amazing to sit there in the courtroom with educated people who graduated from some of America's best universities and aren't stupid. They're intelligent people. And they're still willing to basically prostitute the Constitution, prostitute the law, prostitute common sense, just to implement what they want to implement.
So I would think you would probably agree with me that it seems to be like it's almost just a selfish way of promoting whatever agenda it is.
Yep.
That they espouse, and the Constitution and natural law be damned.
Yep. I would have to agree with you totally, and it's very, very frustrating to sit there through this legal process with these judges and do this. We've had judges argue that, there is a Second Amendment, and okay, it is a right, but if you ban this kind of gun, it's okay because we still let you have this other kind of gun, so this law is okay. Well, that's like saying, like, you know, you can ban a certain book because you still read a different book. The court would never say that. You know, or you can have this newspaper, but you can't have that newspaper. The court would never say that. When it comes to guns, hey, it's okay, you know, because you can have a shotgun, we can ban an AR-15 because you still allowed to have one kind of gun, so it's okay. And this is the kind of twisted logic they will use to get around any time they want to keep a gun control law on the books. So we've had to be very, very careful in how we've been attacking this and building this foundation, both in the laws we're attacking and the plaintiffs we're seeking and the jurisdictions we're filing.
Yeah, and I think that resonates with a lot of, in particular, I mean, this is AR15.com. You know, we are the largest firearms site on the net, and it says it right in the name, AR15.com. And then you have, I'm not sure how familiar you are with our site, but I mean, there's.
I am.
You can actually look. Yeah, you can actually look on some of the threads when people are posting pictures of these, you know, absolutely horrible looking AR15s. That are coming from California and New York because they can't have a pistol grip. So somebody out there who had too much time on their hands and not enough engineering background designs these absolutely horrendous stock and muzzle configurations to make these things pass these laws that have absolutely nothing to do with the firearm itself, but how it actually looks. But again, that being said, how... You know, one of the big things is obviously everybody always says that if you were to, and you just pointed it out, if you were to go and say this book is okay to read because it only has 150 pages, but a 300-page book is too powerful for the average person, or you're not smart enough to control a book with that many pages, but yet you can have Dr. Seuss, but you can't have Shakespeare, it would be absolutely. You know, you'd be ousted from any position of power that you could possibly be in if a public official said that sort of thing. But yet when it comes to the Second Amendment, that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be just the opposite. So I guess my question is, how do you use the other parts of the Constitution that I guess are traditionally more well respected by the same people who would use who do not respect the Second Amendment, and what kind of, I guess, analogies or parallels can you make and use those in your arguments using the rest of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights?
Okay. Benjamin, I'll answer that, but then I'm going to have to drop off the phone with you off the show because I'm on longer than I thought I was, and I have another commitment I have to get to.
Not a problem.
Okay, but basically what we do is in a lot of our legal arguments, we try to find cases in other areas of the Bill of Rights that run similar to the kind of arguments we're trying to make in the Second Amendment, where there's already case law in another area of the Bill of Rights. Now that, of course, we got the Second Amendment Supreme Court ruling that it's a fundamental individual right, we try to find other cases of fundamental rights in the Bill of Rights of the Constitution where we can make the exact same arguments on a parallel and show, well, in this case, here's what happened and here's how the court ruled, therefore you have to rule this way in this case, too. And that, of course, is a good intellectual thing to do. The problem is, again, you do have some of these judges that don't really care about intellectual arguments or past settled case law. What they want to do is just write their own legislation from the bench, so to speak. But by and large, that's what we try to do, and we use those kinds of things in not only our direct briefs that we file, but also in the amicus briefs that we file, our friend of the court briefs in various cases. Right now, we're involved in 19 key cases around the United States that are either currently filed, being litigated, or on the drawing board, just about ready to be filed. So we've never had this many at any one given time. Normally it's one or two cases a year. This is an amazing amount of legal work going on right now defending gun rights, and every gun owner should be proud of what's happening and what we're doing, accomplishing in the courts.
Well, sir, I know you're pressed for time. I certainly appreciate having you on the show, Mr. Alan Gottlieb. Executive Director from the Second Amendment Foundation. Sir, you're welcome anytime to come on ARFCOM, and I'd love to have you again.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for all you do. Have a great day.
Thank you, sir. We thank you for all you do as well. And again, that was Mr. Alan Gottlieb from the Second Amendment Foundation. That is saf.org. Great interview with him. Again, talking about the Second Amendment and what everybody can do to try to, how the courts are being used and how we can try to, you know, make the arguments for freedom and for you know, just getting the fight in the good fight. Earlier, again, we had on Joe DeBrugalis from the NRA talking about the Eddie the Eagle program and gun safety for kids. One of the things that Alan touched on was the Chicago case and the situation going on there, which is that there is this new city ordinance or countywide ordinance that's also limiting the number of firearms that you're allowed to have. And I came across a relatively interesting article. It's on shtfplan.com, and as you, the SHTF, as those of you know, when the stuff hits the fan, so it's stuffhitsthefanplan.com. But there's an article here that's called "How Many Guns Are Too Many?" And I'm going to go through a little bit of this, and I'm going to go a little bit in depth here on it to make sure that you guys are up to speed. But there was a thread on it in the general discussion, I don't know, a week or so ago on AR15.com regarding basically a gentleman, and this is Illinois, so we know that the laws there are not favorable, but I'll just go ahead and start in this article and just, and we're just going to read through it, some of it a little bit. But the story goes, after responding to a burglary call at Rockford, Illinois home, police failed to apprehend the thief, but found something that is perhaps much more interesting. WTVO reports that upon entering the home of an unnamed 67-year-old resident, they were surprised to find a weapons cache of over 300 weapons, ranging from shotgun to rifles. Now, we had talked last week here on Radio Free ARFCOM about the term weapons versus firearms, so I just want you guys to pay attention to some of the terminology they use in this article. But right in the first paragraph, we have the words weapon used twice in the same sentence. I will continue with the article now. The homeowner, a registered firearm owner, was out of town at the time of the burglary. According to police, the weapons were taken for safekeeping. The guns will be cross-checked against police databases to ensure they have not been used for criminal activity. The author goes on to say, while it's probably a good idea to take the weapons for safekeeping, considering that the home was broken into and the homeowner was out of town, what's equally interesting is the reaction of the neighbors. Quote, it's just unreal to see this many guns involved a regular residential neighborhood, says concerned resident MacArthur Tenen. Coley Woods lives across the street from the home. He says, quote, I'm thinking it's an accident or something, but I look over and I see them with all them rifles. Woods says, even if he's a registered gun owner or not, that just seems like it's too many rifles. The author makes the conclusion, that brings to the forefront of the question of how many guns are too many. 300 may seem like quite a large number to the average non-gun collecting American. But the homeowner in this particular case is 67 years old, suggesting he may have been a collector of fine weaponry for several decades. Considering this, it's not out of the question for a retiree to amass a large gun collection. Hopefully, the homeowner will have his guns returned when he gets back to town, but he'll most certainly have a lot of questions to answer at a local police station. A recent case in Texas, a search warrant executed against a resident who had been involved in digging an underground bunker yielded a variety of self-defense armaments, including large amount of ammo and 19 weapons, as well as some compressed gas tanks for welding. Quote, it's scary to know that he had them all that down there. What if something had exploded? Quote, the neighbor said. Again, we have another example of police seizing weapons for, quote, safekeeping, was recently reported at a home in San Luis Obispo, California, a resident who was legally target shooting on his land. After executing an illegal, and those are the author's words, search warrant, police found a safe containing several weapons and subsequently seized those weapons for safekeeping. The justification for the search and seizure was that the homeowner negligently discharged his firearm, something he had done for years without issues. It seems that any time law enforcement enters a home, be it legally or illegally, a weapons case is found. Anything more than a rifle and handgun perhaps rings alarm, resulting in a painstaking process for the gun owner if they ever want to retrieve the weapons. The author continues, since the Second Amendment of the Constitution makes no specific reference the number of arms an individual can store for personal defense, there should be no question as to how many weapons one can personally own and keep at home. I'm sure all the ARFCOM listeners would agree with that. You know, but and then he goes on to make the example of perhaps one gun per household, like the Chicago is. So this is a pretty interesting article talking about. Continuing on, he says, where should we draw the line? He says, maybe the best thing to do is determine if the individual in question has or had ill intentions with the weapons before we use the media to spread fear about extremist right-wing pistol packers. He says, one thing's for sure, however, because of the failures of our federal policing agencies to stop the flow of illegal aliens through the border, ranchers in states like Texas and Arizona should probably be heavily armed, lest they end up stabbed or shot or have their land taken over, such as was the gentleman killed on the Arizona border a couple months back that also made the cover of a couple of the NRA magazines. So, again, this is an article, how many guns are too many, on shtfplan.com. And so I'd like you guys to think about that. And, you know, if you want to post on the forum about it and talk about it a little bit, but obviously many of us are, you know, proud firearm owners, and some of the stuff that we read about, we always have on these ARFCOM threads, people talking about, oh, if the police ever, you know, came to my house for an accident or a fire, and then how the media would report it, you know, crazed right winger because he had Fox News on with a cache of heavy caliber, you know, baby seeking, bulletproof piercing, police death killing rays of destruction when the guy has a 38 special and a 22. I mean, this is the stuff that we post about all the time here on ARFCOM, but it's nice to see a fresh perspective from someone outside of the ARFCOM world. I know that many of us that are heavily involved on the site, and I may not be a huge poster on AR15.com, but I certainly read an awful lot of the threads. So it certainly seems like, you know, there's a consensus that many of us on ARFCOM may be these very individuals that are always labeled as potentially extremists or have, you know, arsenals or caches of firearms. So I guess the only advice that I would, or the only conclusion that I would draw is the bottom line is to try and maintain OPSEC, as they say, you know, operational security or just secrecy in general, as much as possible with regards to your firearms as well as survival preparations. And make sure you have a way of safely securing your firearms when you're not at home. And that goes well in line with not just keeping your firearms safe and secure from any unauthorized individuals, whether it be from a potential criminal or from a child or from a neighbor or somebody you have in your home. Make sure that you guys keep all your stuff safe and locked up, and really don't spread the word that you're a firearm owner if you don't really want to. I mean, it's one thing to have firearms for personal protection, for security, but I don't know if I would necessarily be advertising that on my front door. Although, the flip side of that is these beautiful NRA ILA yard signs encouraging people to vote. When you have a large NRA sign in your front yard encouraging people to vote, that may discourage you from from purchasing those signs because you don't want to reveal to everybody in the, on the block that you're a firearm owner. So that's certainly a family decision and certainly a decision that would have to be made with the utmost judgment and discretion whether or not to, you know, to let people know your political feelings with regard to your household. But I would tend to think that in terms of firearms in general, just make sure that you're discreet. Make sure that you're not doing anything, whether it be illegal or not. Let's try to all be legal in our things, and that, and I don't mean anything, you know, obviously bad, but you know, if you're shooting in an area that's not zoned to have that, you could cause trouble. You could have attract attention to yourself. You know, things like that that. You know, there's a lot of things out there that we could potentially be getting in trouble for and have these stories written about us that we may not think that we're doing something wrong, you know, whether if we're carrying, say, a firearm uncased or open carrying on our property, that they may not be illegal, but they may not necessarily be exercising good judgment if you live in an urban or a suburban area where you have lots of people that may or may not be super familiar with firearms. So I'm just saying this because I wanted to keep all the ARFCOM audience out there safe. And, you know, like I say, don't invite the man into your life or bad things can potentially happen. So that was just an interesting little tidbit that I, you know, that I found surfing the web looking for topics for you guys, the listeners out there, that I thought was made a good topic for discussion for everybody. Moving on now to everybody's favorite segment, at least it is mine, the zombie tip of the week. I just wanted to let you know that Beyond Exile by J.L. Bourne is out now. I received my copy through Amazon last week. I plan on reading it this weekend. I have a business conference. I'm leaving for Tallahassee on Wednesday morning, and I'll be back Sunday, so I'll try to get some work done for the audience here during the week, and I'm going to spend some time hopefully relaxing and not attending too much of the, you know, stuff that I'm supposed to. I'm going to probably spend some time in the hotel room and just relax and read some zombie novels. But that being said, Beyond Exile by J.L. Bourne is out now. I got my copy through Amazon. It is the sequel to the first-person zombie novel, which is written in diary format, called Day by Day Armageddon. And that's following the paths of a military man who finds himself caught up in the zombie apocalypse. So I plan on rereading at least Day by Day Armageddon and then jumping right into Beyond Exile. And that's been a relatively long-anticipated book for those of you that are into the zombie genre of fiction. Next up, we have the Zombie Response Control Evasion Vehicle photo thread on the zombie forum, and the first post, I think, nails it. They've got the number one, the Unimog. It has range, room for supplies, solar, wind power generators, and a tall height. They got a picture, looked like it was probably taken in the, I don't know, 70s, but that's some ugly clothes. Another, the Maximog, which is a crazy-looking vehicle, but certainly will travel you and your companions well through the undead hordes of shambling brain eaters. The Ford F-650, my personal favorite, because it does have the big blue oval, and it would absolutely rip that Dodge below it to pieces without a second thought. The Ford F-650 has got the big fuel tanks. It's a dually. It is got the huge steel bumper. It's a diesel. It is pretty awesome. The Army truck below it. I'm not even going to talk about the Dodge because it's just pointless. But the truck below it is the big Army vehicle. That'd be an MRAP. And then they have the Milsurp armored, and then the SWAT vehicle as well. So there's some pretty cool stuff. One of the funnier ones here is the Zombie Emergency Response Operations Vehicle, which is actually one of those short school buses, which I'm sure many ARFCOMers rode to school in the mornings. At least some of the posters on GD. So, continuing on, we've got a couple of zombie vehicles on here, so that's pretty cool. Let's keep going. We got a few more minutes left. Why do we have a thing for zombies? Although my question is, why do they have a thing for us? And they say, is it the irony that something slow, dumb, and weak may very well be the worst disaster you could ever face simply because of their sheer numbers, thereby giving us the fear we like to feel and validate our innate conservative urge to prepare? Or when we are preparing, are we just using that as an excuse to buy thousands of dollars of guns, ammo, knives, and gears to, quote, prepare? I know I've used that as an excuse to assure an assault rifle for every member of my family, even my daughters, age 5 and 6, and my son, 11 months old. That's posted from a poster in New Mexico named Chippen's Lag. He says, or is it more simple and primitive than that? He says, I think about the stuff constantly, evaluate my home and surroundings, read books, fuel and ammo sources around the city, routes of escape, and so on and so on. So at any rate, he's asking the questions, why do we have a thing for zombies? You know, it is one of the things that he says, some of the posters out here, one person says, well, because we're all out of Nazis, it's a deeply seated wish for an enemy so pure evil and downright hated that we could mow down with our AR-15s with absolutely no remorse. That certainly is a interesting take on it. These some pictures here are pretty funny that they're having through here, but my opinion on it was that if you can prepare for the zombies, you can pretty much prepare for anything. And then the zombies funny topic, if you find this, it is pretty hilarious. I'll let it speak for itself, but it's a cute little photo. I do have an instant message just come through. I got about 1 minute left. Let me pull up my IM and see if that's relevant to the show here before we leave. Gray Guy responded, zombie book, ARFCOM member Steve DRK008, that's Stephen Pajak, zombie novel, Mad Swine, has been published and is available from ARFCOM. It's a good story, and the author is an ARFCOMer. Please, I will try to IM him and get him on the show as an interview. I think that would be an excellent segment, so I will respond to you, Gray Guy, and if you know how to contact him, or if I should just go through the website, let me know. This has been your show. Please be sure to click on the link for the special op support raffle on AR15.com. It's only $10 to enter, and all the money goes directly to help Special Forces operators on the front line fighting for our freedom. Thanks to AR15.com and for hosting the show, and most importantly, thanks to the Radio Free ARFCOM fans. And be sure to accidentally the whole show to all your friends. And please visit the AR15.com site sponsor links and support the site by purchasing a team membership. As always, I encourage the listening audience to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests. And please be sure to tune in next week for another great show. But until then, this has been your Radio Free ARFCOM. Thank you.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.